Hello and welcome to The Confession Box. I'm your host, Wendy Grace. Coming up on today's episode, we'll focus on the impact that digital devices and also social media in particular are having on children, on their overall well-being. There's so much evidence showing the detrimental impact that these devices are having on young people today, but it is probably one of the most difficult challenges that parents face in navigating. So in this podcast, we'll explore the role that legislation, school, community, and of course, we as parents have to play. That's all what's coming up on today's Confession Box episode. Can you imagine leaving your six-year-old in a playground knowing there was a predator there waiting to groom them? Or bringing them to a violent over-18s film and asking them to close your eyes, hoping that they might not see what was in front of them? Or maybe would you hand them a pack of 20 cigarettes because, well, everybody else has them and it just can't be helped? These are things that for most of you listening, you're probably thinking, what are you talking about, Wendy? They're unfathomable. Because our primary goal is to keep our children healthy, happy and safe. It's a strange world we've entered in where we kind of put the online world into a separate box and we're not parenting our children the same way in the online world as we do in the offline world. We know from the data that a huge proportion of children who have devices are allowed alone in their rooms with them, where those very predators that I've talked about are there, those very harms to mental health, to well-being are there 24/7. And here in Ireland, nearly a quarter of six-year-olds own their own smartphone. And that figure steadily increases to, by the time children are 12, nearly 100% of them have a smartphone. But the interesting thing is, the same report showed the majority of parents don't feel confident in guiding their children in how to stay safe online. Now, this is one of the things that we obviously have to prioritise and support one another in, because there are now hundreds of peer-reviewed studies which show the impact of access to screens and the impact that they have on mental health, child development, socialisation, anxiety, depression. The list could actually go on. And that's before we even go into the impact of things like cyberbullying, online grooming, the exposure to violent, hardcore pornography. Again, that list goes on. I don't think we can shrug our shoulders and say, the cat's out of the bag. Yes, our children's worlds are totally saturated with technology, and it can, of course, be a really good thing, and it's our job to say, here's how we navigate it. But today we're going to explore the fact that change is happening, from grassroots movements of parents to school communities and demands on tech companies for them to be made more accountable. Now, my first guest today is Alex Cooney of Cyber Safe Kids. Now, recently, the media regulator here in Ireland, the Commission Man, released an updated draft online safety code. Now, that's going to be submitted to the European Commission for assessment. Now, it's hoped that the code is going to come into force later this year. And what it does is it focuses on video sharing platforms that are headquartered here in Ireland. And if these companies breach the rules, there can be fines of up to 20 million euro. And the interesting thing is we're already running into problems because, for example, Snapchat, which is really popular among young people, doesn't have their headquarters here, so they don't fall under this code. Alex, maybe you can talk to us a little bit more about what's in the code, what it aims to achieve as well.
Yeah, sure. So this all relates to this new piece of legislation that was passed in December 2022, the Online Safety and Media Regulation Act. So since the publication of that legislation, we now have a Commissioner Man, which is our Media Commission, and under that is our Online Safety Commissioner, right, who is looking at the whole area of online safety. So this first code is something that they promised as part of that legislation, which really is the regulatory piece. You know, like, what exactly are we asking of these online services? And when I talk about online services, I mean the very recognizable names, you know, the Googles, the Metas, the TikToks, you know, the LinkedIns. You know, how are we ensuring that they are accountable to their users in some way? Because up to this point, it really has been self-regulation. So the publication of this first online safety code, which I think they are still calling a draft because it needs to have that final approval from the European Commission, but is essentially done, right? You know, it's this kind of, I'm told it's sort of 99% there. This marks the first time that they have a framework, you know, a code to which they must adhere. So it is a landmark.
What's in the code? What sort of stuff are we saying to these big tech companies? You're going to be fined. I think, is it up to 20 million or something if you don't adhere to the code? What sort of stuff does it cover?
Well, so it covers things like targets and timeframes. It in relation to user complaints, it covers things like parental controls. It covers things like the collection of children's data for commercial use. So it says online services must not use children's data for financial gain, basically. So it covers a range of things. It's a range of areas. It's aligns itself closely, obviously, to the legislation. The devil essentially will be in the detail. We will need to see how this plays out over time. We're not going to see it's, I don't think it's even, going to be, it's got to be obviously passed by the European Commission. So it's going to be some months before we start to see it actually being actively implemented as such. And there's reporting requirements and things like that as well on the part of the services. So it will bring about change. It's just the question of how much change it will bring.
One of the things that I think we always have to kind of say when we're talking about this is, look, these platforms, these apps, they want you to be on them. They're made to be addictive. And I would imagine that, this wasn't something that was kind of chosen by them. It's had to be through regulation, etc., because that's their job, is to make money and keep not only kids, but us on the platforms for as long as possible. Is anything like that covered, just in terms of how addictive it can be, these algorithms that are used to keep us kind of hooked on, and then also promoting, I've seen various investigations where someone is kind of posed as a 13-year-old, and within less than an hour they're seeing self-harm content, stuff about body dysmorphia, just off stuff that's really damaging and harmful. So is that covered?
So you're essentially talking about the recommender system.
Yeah.
And you're right, there was a big piece on Primetime a few weeks ago that looked at TikTok specifically, and TikTok was probably one of the sort of the ones that sort of changed the way the recommender system works, so that it was instead of kind of following, who the friendships were in your friendship network, so your feed isn't, about, what friend posted what in a chronological order. It is often about something that has been determined as your interest. So you could have hovered over a piece of content. You could have, looked at a few different pieces of content that were related to the same subject. And it's then determining, okay, this person is interested in that, which sounds innocent enough, right? Okay, so it's just going to be based on our interests. I'm interested in cooking, so let's,
my feed your feed will look different to mine.
Exactly. My feed's all about food and dogs. But, it can be really problematic to have this content coming through a feed, especially if it relates to harmful content. And we know that this algorithm is trained for engagement, right? So it's all about keeping eyes on screen, keeping the user engaged. And unfortunately, engagement often looks, things like anger, fear, they increase engagement.
Yeah, sexualized content. I saw one piece of research when it was looking at those YouTube shorts and how it specifically with young boys sent them particular type of content that could be sexual content or could be kind of very misogynistic kind of stuff, but it was pushing those videos on them. And then of course, once you click one, it keeps sending you.
Well, and DCU actually did a big study on this and looked at the type of content being served up to, young men and adolescents, and it was very, there was a kind of tendency towards this more kind of misogynistic, kind of anti-feminist type content. And I think, again, if you're being sent down rabbit holes of certain types of content, it really distorts your worldview. You're not seeing the balance of an argument. You're not seeing two sides of anything. You're seeing one type of content. So there's kind of, and if it's harmful content, so we had a case recently enough involving a young girl, and her feed was being overwhelmed with this sort of, it was a part of a kind of mental health awareness challenge, so you share your story and it's an opportunity for, I suppose in some senses, to take control of your story. But if you're very young and you're very vulnerable, that can be problematic in itself. So she had posted a story about being bullied, really badly bullied, and the impact that it had had on her. And she talked about self-harming. She talked about restricting her eating because the bullying had been around her size and shape, and her mother had noticed since she had posted this video, which they had subsequently removed, but only after it had been viewed thousands of times, her feed was being overwhelmed with this sort of content of other young, vulnerable girls talking about self-harm, suicide, anorexia, sexual assault, and this is a 13-year-old girl who is clearly vulnerable. And this content that she's consuming. And we've got to remember how much time children and young people are spending online.
That's the thing, Alex, is that when you talk about some of this stuff, even with this regulation and this code and all that sort of stuff, you're going, okay, there might be a bit more accountability, a bit more responsibility, stuff will be taken down, but ultimately when and how, and as you say, could be seen thousands of times. So it's part of the picture. But is the other part, I mean, we're seeing grassroots initiatives now, primary schools across Ireland saying, hey, do you want to sign a voluntary code? Say, I'm going to delay giving phones to our children until at least secondary school. You have a movement, it's a name, I believe, starting in Ireland with parents saying, hey, we want a smartphone-free childhood for our kids, kind of recognising all of the evidence, looking at the harms and saying, do you know what? There's other things that once we learned were really bad for us, we restrict them. Or even, I was thinking about this the other day, you can't drive till you're 18. Cars are really good, as is digital media in the right, used in the right way. They're really good. They're great things, but only when you're at a certain age that you can handle it.
But also when you're learning to drive a car or you're learning to ride a bike, there is a long period of preparation before that, right? Before you're given that license, before you're given that bike and told you can go off independently. We have to prepare children and young people. And I think that's what's often missing from this discussion when we talk about banning smartphones. We're not focusing on how are we equipping children in the meantime to be able to thrive in the digital environment? Because that's what I want. That's what I would like for my children, that they have the opportunity to thrive in the digital environment, obviously in a healthy, balanced way. But, you know, these things take time. It involves parental engagement. It involves education in schools. And it involves tech companies being properly held to account, you know, so that they're not dancing to their tune. They're actually dancing to a consistent, clearly regulated code of conduct as such. So we have a lot that needs to change. I also think this focus on smartphones misses the fact that a lot of young children, and we know this from our trends and usage data, so an 8 to 10 year old is much more likely to have a smartphone, a tablet or a games console than they are a smartphone. We see the smartphone ownership increase from about the age of 11 up, and then by the age of 12, it is the dominant device for sure. And yes, it is the most portable one. So when you see children out and about, it's the smartphone they're on. But actually, we would say children in their bedrooms with doors shut, on their own, with a device, they're incredibly vulnerable. So it doesn't matter whether it's a games console or a tablet.
Anything that can connect to the internet.
Anything that connects to the internet. So this, what are we talking about when we talk about this ban? Are we talking about all smart devices? Because what we'd really like to see is that there's proper legislation around things like age verification. So that puts the onus back on tech companies to ensure that there are proper age gates that are very difficult to circumnavigate. Because this system at the moment of self-declaration of age clearly doesn't work. We know there's masses of underage users. We track that in our trends and usage data. But also, you know, we need this kind of much clearer focus on how are we equipping children in this to be online in a safe way. So there is responsibility in a lot of different places here, you know, whether it's parents, whether it's the education system, whether it's the tech companies. And, you know, let's also ensure that we're encompassing the whole digital environment when we're
don't just talk about smartphones.
Don't just talk about smartphones. And actually, I think it probably would be quite difficult to legislate to ban them, because, you know, that will intervene in kind of parental choice and so on. And yes, you could liken it to tobacco, you could liken it to alcohol, but it's not as, you know, it is a bit more nuanced, right? You know, children are growing up in the digital age. There is an argument to say it's important that they get educated on how to, you know, with digital skills, digital literacy knowledge, so that they can thrive in the digital environment. So I'm all for holding off. Don't get me wrong. A key message that we give to parents and educators when we go out and do our talks is, you know, hold off for as long as you can in giving your child their own device, right? I mean, there can be family devices that they use in a kind of supervised way, but hold off in giving them their own one. So I think that is a very sensible thing to do. But do that with all the devices, not just the smartphone. And also then ensure that there is that parental engagement. And what we're seeing, unfortunately, is that a lot of parents feel out of step, overwhelmed, on the back foot. You know, this is something we hear all the time from parents. So we do need to also think about how are we equipping parents to parent in the digital age. This isn't something they were parented on. You know, they were parented on how learning to ride a bike, learning to drive a car. You know, we've been through that. But this is new terrain. It really, it's a phenomenon of the last 15 years since that first smartphone was developed by Apple. in 2007. You know, so this is a phenomenon of this of the yeah. recent times.
And for most parents listening, we are the last generation to have grown up without the internet in our pocket. So it's different for most generations that have followed on from us. It's been great, as always, to talk to Alex Cooney of CyberSafe Kids. Empowering parents, as Alex says, is part of the picture. There's lots of great resources, information and help on the CyberSafe Kids website, cybersafekids.ie. Alex, thanks for being with us today. Interesting just to hear Alex there obviously talking a little bit about this online code and the impact it may or may not have. But I think for the kind of everyday stuff, parents that are listening, I think we probably feel often just a little bit overwhelmed by the technology that our children are engaging with, and they always seem kind of a step ahead of us. So it's really encouraging to see grassroots movements emerging where parents are saying, look, we're seeing the research, we're seeing the evidence that this is bad for our kids, but it's really blooming difficult to try and navigate it all. So how can we work with one another? One such movement is called Smartphone Free Childhood. It started in the UK when two parents basically got together and said, look, we want to delay giving our kids digital devices, giving them smartphones for as long as possible, but there needs to be a kind of strength in numbers. There needs to be a cultural shift here. And I'm joined now by one of the founders to tell us a little bit more about the movement and where it all began. It's fantastic to have Claire Ferniehoff with me. Claire, maybe just take it back to how it all started.
So as you said, yeah, we my friend Daisy and I started a WhatsApp group, and it was really just to empower our friends, really, and each other to delay giving smartphones to our kids, because we both got daughters, and we realised that in a couple of years it's going to become the norm. You know, it's the norm that they will get a smartphone. We thought this is mad. So yeah, we set up a WhatsApp group, and 1,000 parents joined our group within a day, which completely took us by surprise. By day two, we had 2,000 parents. And it's gone from there. We've now got about 90,000 parents across the UK and also now globally. It's starting in other countries as well. And everyone is just coming together and saying, let's do something different. We don't want our kids to be hooked on screens for their whole childhood. So, yeah, let's all come together and empower each other to delay giving smartphones for longer.
One of the things I think that it's done is it's kind of allowing people to talk about this, because parents can often be thinking, you know, I don't want to say how I feel about this. I don't want another parent to be judged, or they might feel that, you know what, I just don't know what to do. I feel totally out of my depth. But it's clear from the support that you receive so quickly from parents that, you know, we know that childhood and growing up and what's on these things, they don't really work together, do they?
Exactly. You know, I think it's this thing that we all know deep down as parents. It doesn't feel right, does it? But it's become this thing that people feel like they can't talk about. No one wants to judge each other's parenting. You know, we know that actually it's really tough being a parent, and we're all doing our best. But the problem is these devices are just so addictive and so alluring. But the thing that's just totally mad is that we thought we were on our own, and we just weren't. They were just thousands and thousands of parents all quietly feeling the same thing. So it's just, you know, it's about it's coming together and going, actually, hang on, do you feel the same? Yes, let's do something different. And it's kind of safety in numbers. And we've just been amazed how much it feels like we're just pushing an open door here. Everybody goes, well, yeah, of course, let's not do this.
Is that the main premise then, Claire, that, and we've seen it here in Ireland where a campaign started in a few schools in Greystones and County Wicklow, where they decided to get parents to sign this voluntary code to say we're going to delay giving children smartphones at primary level, so until they're at least kind of 12 or 13, that parents, when they come together and say, look, if we all agree to do this, then it's so much easier not to give in to the peer pressure to give kids these devices.
Exactly. Yeah, because most parents we've spoken to, the only reason they give a smartphone is because all of the other children have one. It's not because they think it's going to give them any benefits, and it's not because they're not worried. It's just simply no one wants their child to be the odd one out. And that's what we need to change. So we just need to change the norm. We need collective action, and people can't do it on their own. You can only do this if people join together. And actually, we were really inspired by Greystones. That was one of the things that made us think about it. And you will have seen in a couple of weeks ago, St Albans in England did exactly the same thing, and 24 primary schools came together and said, right, we're all smartphone free. And we're beginning to see this ripple effect, actually, which started in Ireland, but it just needs many more people and many more schools to come together and be brave and actually do what we all know is the right thing to do for our kids.
Do you think parents know how damaging these devices can be, Claire? I mean, what is the problem with children having them?
Yeah, I think actually most parents don't quite realise what their kids are doing on their phones. The stories we have heard from our community in the last few months are totally shocking. You know, we've heard from a GP who's been treating an 8-year-old boy who's got PTSD because he saw hardcore pornography. We know that quite a large percentage of children are seeing things like beheading videos, fatal accidents. You know, they're being pushed down these very, very sort of with the algorithm into misogyny, you know, just lots of extreme content. And of course, there's a social comparison. It's that, you know, that performative thing. It's just not a healthy way to interact when you feel like you're constantly comparing yourself with other children when they've got a developing brain. You know, they're not like us. They don't have a fully developed prefrontal cortex. And so this is actually really wiring their brain up in a not healthy way. And I think that's why we're beginning to see these really, really big problems. So there's a whole range of risks, really. And I think on the flip side, I would ask, why do they need a smartphone at this age? I feel like we've all just kind of sleptwalked into this assumption that they do. Actually, they don't. If they need to contact each other, they can use a simple phone that's not a smartphone. That does the trick. So I think we kind of all signed up to something without quite thinking about it. And now we're very quickly trying to row back from it.
Sometimes it's frustrating to see that some, and I can understand this feeling that some people might say, oh, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, on the one hand, you could say that, but on the other hand, you could say, look, when we got these devices, we didn't actually realise how highly addictive they could be. Even the content, what's accessible online now to compare to when the first smartphone was introduced, whatever it was, 15 years ago, has rapidly evolved. Do you think it's a case, Claire, now of, well, with what we know now in terms of the impacts on what children are seeing on anxiety, on self-harm, predatory behaviour, the list goes on and on, that we don't really have any choice, but like we've seen with other things like, you know, smoking, alcohol, gambling, you know, obviously kids can't drive until they're a certain age, that it just has to be one of those things that we say, no, it's not good for them.
Absolutely. You know, I think as a civilised society, we have a responsibility to protect our kids from harm. And so when people say the genie's out of the bottle, it's too late, I think that's just completely defeatist. You know, if a train left a station and you knew it was going to crash, you wouldn't just let it crash. You'd do everything you could to try and stop that happening. And I think we're in that same position. And as you say, you know, it's happened with tobacco. It happened with seatbelts. We changed the norm on that. You know, these things can change. You make decisions based on the evidence. And as you've said, when we first started giving smartphones to our kids, we didn't have the evidence. We now have that evidence. We know that the younger a child gets a smartphone, the worse their mental health will be. And to me, that's all you need to know. You know, it's actually very simple. And of course, there are forces at play. The tech companies want us to believe that it's very complicated. They want our kids to be online all the time. But what they want is not what we as parents want. And so it's time for us all together, come together as parents and stand up and say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to do something different.
Which brings me to my next question, which is that this is kind of a multi-layered approach needed here. You're talking about one part of it, this kind of grassroots movements of parents, of schools, of communities saying, look, let's navigate this together. It ain't easy. Here in Ireland at the moment, there's a draft online code that our media regulator here is coming up with. In my opinion, it really doesn't go far enough. But have you seen, just as your movement has grown, Claire, that this is having an impact on kind of legislation and sending a clear message to your government saying you have to make these companies more accountable?
Absolutely, yeah, it really has. Our government reached out to us within a few weeks and wanted to chat and you know, talking about what they were planning. We've got you know, the online safety bill, which is in the implementation period at the moment. But like what you're saying, it doesn't go far enough. So yes, governments are now really prioritising us and seeing this as a big issue. But there's always the financial issues at play of the tech companies, and it's quite hard for kind of governments to extricate themselves from that. And I think that's why the power of parents is so strong for us to kind of, we've got a very pure intention here. We just want to protect our children. And, you know, governments actually need to be much, much stronger and stand up to these tech companies and just say this is absolutely enough. So, you know, there will be changes in the next year, but from what I can see, it's not going to go far enough. And I think that's why it has to be parents as well changing that norm, because in a way it's the only thing that we can control. We don't have time to wait for governments to make this change now. You know, it needs to happen as quickly as possible. Children are suffering right now, today. So yes, governments need to do a lot more, but actually we need to do it as parents as well.
Yeah, we have to support each other. I'm sure you're connected to so many parents across the UK, and I know, Claire, you've helped kind of the Irish contingent get going with similar groups. But have you heard from parents who've kind of, I think there's a big fear about, oh well, my child already has a phone, and like, how do I take it off them, that have been able to kind of start again and going, wow, I'm seeing a healthier, happier child?
Yeah, and that is the hardest thing, of course, taking a phone off a child. You know, it's really, really hard because they're so addicted. But we do have lots of parents in our community who've done that because they felt they had no other option. And it's been amazing to hear what they've said. You know, people saying that, I've seen my daughter's personality come back. It had faded away. She was so creative and she was doing nothing except for being on her phone. And now she's drawing and writing and reading again. We've heard that story many, many times. So although it's hard, it is possible. And I think the more parents start to do it, the better. But, you know, we understand that's so, so hard. And I think for parents who are in that situation, of course, there are still things you can do. And it's about the controls and the, you know, being very, very strict with the screen time so that there is at least time for kids to switch off and to do all the other things they need to be doing. Because, yeah, it's a really tough thing to have to do. But as I said, we're seeing people doing it and taking that very, very brave move. Mm-hmm. And generally, it's wonderful. In fact, we've even had some kids handing their phones back to their parents saying, I don't want this. I wish it didn't exist. Please take it away from me.
Yeah, that's something that's actually quite heartbreaking when I've been looking at the research done by the likes of Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Anxious Generation.
Mm, yeah.
And I know, I think it was the UK Education Secretary. And similar research has been done here. When they actually sat down and they talked to teens, they're literally saying, I wish I didn't have this thing. Why are you letting me have it in my bedroom? They're crying out for boundaries from their parents.
Absolutely. Every time you ask children, would you rather social media didn't exist? If no one else had it, would you rather not have it? And they always say, yeah, I wish. It's such a burden for them. You know, it's awful. They can never get away from it. They need a break from it. And that's why this situation is so mad. Kids aren't stupid. They know it's doing them damage. They don't want it. Parents don't want it. Teachers don't want it. So what are we doing? That's the thing. That's why we need to kind of all stop right now and do something differently. And I think there's always an assumption that kids really want this stuff. But I think they want it until they know what it actually means and what it does to their lives. And then they wish they could just hand it back.
Finally, just to ask you, Claire, for parents that are listening and maybe you've given them courage, you're kind of emboldening them going, OK, I'm going to do this. What would be your kind of words of encouragement to them?
I would say, yeah, you know, go onto our website, smartphonefreechildhood.co.uk, and join a group. You know, we have groups everywhere. And it's just an amazing community that's growing up of like-minded people. It's a really wonderful thing. I think we all, as parents, we feel like we need like-minded parents around us, don't we? And it's a very quick way of getting that. The stories of solidarity we hear on a daily basis are actually really, really moving. We've had parents, you know, in tears texting us being like, I cannot believe I found this movement. You know, it's such a lovely source of support. So I'd say, you know, join it with the hundreds of thousands of parents who all feel the same. And, you know, understand that you're not alone. This is something that we're all struggling with. And there is no judgment. You know, it's so hard being a parent. At the moment, it feels like there are no good options. Whichever decision you take is tough. But, you know, there is support by coming together with other people.
It is so true, Claire. And I think a lot of people just nodding their heads and in total agreement with what you're saying there. And also very thankful that there is grassroots movements like Smartphone Free Childhood emerging in the UK and also here in Ireland as well. Thanks so much for being our guest with us on The Confession Box today. And there, as I was mentioned there, there is these groups emerging here in Ireland as well. So if you want us to send you a link to the Smartphone Free Childhood group that has popped up here in Ireland, just get in touch and we can send the invite link onto that. Thanks so much for joining us on today's Confession Box podcast. I've been your host, Wendy Grace. As always, if you can like and share and subscribe on your favourite podcast platform, that would be fantastic. I'll talk to you soon. God bless you.